Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Support WrestleTalk.
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J Jeff here.
And this is Rick Swan.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
I'm Rocco Cinco Romero.
David Starr.
Support WrestleTalk.
You are watching WrestleTalk.
Congratulations, you got here. Now, subscribe and support
WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk and please subscribe now.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it.
Support Ollie. Support Luke.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Because we talk about wrestling, and I like it.
Support WrestleTalk.
And go subscribe.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is, and whoever Luke Owen is, both the Ravens. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk. Rumble. Now and live.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I'm El Fakeador Laurie Blake and I'm joined by housemate Simon London.
Hello.
Hi mate, how's it going?
Good, I'm sleepy today.
Yeah, well, because we've been doing a big top secret, super secret.
Yeah, we did something so
thingy thing.
The big top secret thing tuckered me out.
Yeah, it was actually a very long day, but it was really fun. We won't go into too many details about what it was for or what happened, but
people saw it on
there was socials. There was wrestlers there and we took some moves and my chest hurts.
Your chest does
and
hurt.
I'm not sure whether I've got trapped wind or whether I've got a caved in rib.
Hey, cause there's only one way to find out.
Rampage Brown was hitting me quite hard.
Yes, and you pooped yourself.
And I pooped myself, yeah. But yeah, I am genuinely concerned that I've got something wrong with me.
Okay.
So I don't think I do very well as a wrestler
because
I'm a bit of a hypochondriac.
So it's taken this moment for you to decide you couldn't make it as a wrestler.
Yeah.
That's the moment that got it.
I've taken a bump and a knock to my confidence.
Right, yeah.
I've taken both.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you feel taking your secret bump?
You know what? I actually wanted to do it again.
Yeah.
But we kind of came short on time.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the fact that two wrestlers said to one of the, well, Rampage said, "Hey, man, that was a hell of a bump."
Mm.
And shook my hand.
What's a hell of a bump?
Now, I know he was just being nice.
Yeah. Because he tried to choke the life out of me. So.
Yeah, and he also nearly killed Pete.
I don't know why he was being nice to you.
He chopped Pete into the sunken place.
Yeah. He chopped Pete angry.
Yeah.
I've not seen Pete like properly livid. But Pete walked off with the venom and a fury that I... I rue the day that Rampage gets his comeuppance from Pete.
Yeah.
Because Pete's going to go full on with that.
Rampage did take a special kind of joy from choking you.
Oh, yeah. There was a look of glee in his face.
And didn't he say to you, I'm just going to go for it a bit?
Yeah.
Just before he did that?
Yeah.
Did he say that to you?
No.
All right, but
no,
just an earshot.
Sure, didn't really.
Who did he say it to?
I don't know, but I
just heard him say it.
Well, I felt him do it.
Oh, right.
I didn't know until it was laid in that it was going to be like.
Yeah, yeah. You went quite red. That was fun.
It was a good day. Yeah.
So everyone's concerned about
not being able to breathe afterwards. Yeah, it was fine.
So everyone will find out what that was all about next week.
Next week, I think. Yeah.
End of next week.
Got to do the editing first, don't we? So.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a video. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, I started doing it today.
Not a long form podcast.
Yeah, I haven't had to actually physically. I've sat in a lot of edits, but I've actually not had to physically edit
a sketch
for what?
Maybe 6 months now.
Yeah.
And they're a pain in the ass.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. It's a lot of putting stuff together.
Yeah. When you actually treat something properly, they're all pain in the ass to put it back together again.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
I had to do one. I once did an overnight edit of a series of like half interview, half gameplay of Andy Serkis playing the Planet of the Apes PlayStation phone thing game that they had where you'd like make all the choices. But they did it like four different times, but chosen all different choices. And it was like, so which playthrough of this level of the game do you want in the video?
Mm.
Or do you want me to rewind it? And it was.
And they never know.
It was all over the place.
Yeah, they never know.
It took all night to tell the story of that. And I hated it.
Mm.
Came out of it being like, I'll never watch an Andy Serkis film again. Yeah, he's dead. I'll never play the PlayStation.
No.
And I'll never look at a monkey.
No.
Ever.
Never?
Never, never.
Wow.
Anyway, time to get into the rest of the show where we'll be talking about the huge shock debut that happened on NXT. Here's the show. This angle was playing out across the sort of the women's War Games feud and setting up because Rhea Ripley's team is full.
Mm-hmm.
Shayna Baszler's team going into the show had one space left to fill. And there was all kind of people were speculating would Dakota Kai turn on Tegan Nox and Rhea Ripley's team after they snubbed her and she could become the last member of Shayna Baszler's team. It doesn't seem like that's the case. But the story they told throughout NXT this week was that the women's roster is being mysteriously attacked. Now, you've got multiple suspects. If you're going to line them up in your sort of Poirot, we've all retired to the drawing room and I'm now going to name the culprit. You could have had Becky Lynch coming down from Raw. You could have had Bayley and Sasha Banks coming down from SmackDown.
They definitely try to push the idea to the audience early that they were going to come from the main roster. Mm-hmm. They said that a few times.
Yeah.
So that's what I was expecting.
Yep. So you've got that. So you've got those two options. You've also got anyone, because initially it was like coming out of the break after the first match. We were told that Tegan Nox and Rhea Ripley had been attacked. We saw it. And so that suggests then that someone on Baszler's team. It might have been Duke and Shafir. It could have been anyone else on the women's roster who's going to side with the heel team. However, later in the show, we then also see that Duke and Shafir are down. Candice LeRae is down. Scarlett Bordeaux makes her surprise debut. Just a wild Scarlett Bordeaux appeared in the back of a shot. Wasn't mentioned. That just sort of passed by.
She had a couple of lines as well.
Yeah. Candice, are you okay? I'm so hot. And then it was just like... going into the final match, which was Mia Yim versus Io Shirai for the advantage in the War Games match. Yeah. So the idea that like the rest of your teammates will be locked up for 3 minutes while your team constantly has a man advantage, woman advantage. So this was the first ever ladder match, women's ladder match in NXT history, I believe.
Oh, and on tapings?
I think so, yeah.
I think they've had them on a takeover, haven't they?
I think this was the first ever. Maybe it was the first ever just, TV match.
I think there's. I feel like there's been one at a pay-per-view.
But yeah, so it was kind of, they were putting it over as a historic event. It was an amazing little match. We'll go through the match a little bit now before we jump ahead to the finale of this. Mm-hmm. So the match comes with the, I guess just the sort of looming presence of whoever this invader might be, whoever it is that's attacking everyone. There's the sort of we had a clip earlier as well where Mia Yim's warming up backstage and being interviewed by Kathy Kelly, and Dakota Kai comes in and says, "Look, that's all water under the bridge that I wasn't picked for the team. It's Rhea Ripley's choice to make. She made the choice. She chose you. I just want you to know that if anything goes down, I am on your side."
Mm-hmm.
Which, to the conspiracy theorist me, was like, okay, well, you know, maybe this all builds into the big Dakota Kai heel turn.
Yeah, and also ladder matches are just perfect fodder for run-ins normally.
Exactly. And we got a few here.
Yeah, a couple.
I think three, realistically, sort of like in the big run-ins.
I mean, the whole show was just run-ins for days.
Well, that's the story of this episode of NXT, was that basically, because War Games is just around the corner, all we have is people wanting to brawl and go to war. And all these things can only be settled at War Games.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a couple of other instances throughout the show. The match itself, Mia Yim versus Io Shirai, massive respect to Mia Yim for finishing that match.
Yeah.
In the way that they did. Because they could have, like, so the match starts off...
To be honest, overall, I don't think the match was great, to be fair. Like, because it started so slow.
Mm.
The first half was very slow. But it was certainly building to... Because it was always building in narrative as opposed to in match.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The narrative was... This match was really representing a meta-narrative outside of it. But as soon as Mia Yim takes this... You know, she's holding the ladder sideways,
mm-hmm.
takes a top rope drop kick, and she's just sort of too high, sort of hits the top of the ladder,
doesn't it?
She's
sort of holding the ladder up here.
And it hit there.
And then so the drop kick hits there, and I think the ladder snapped against her
face. Joey Mercury'd herself.
Yeah. She was... bloodied immediately.
Yeah, noses really bleed, don't they?
Yeah, noses, they really go gangbusters. They go.
Yeah. Second broken nose of the night. I think Aaliyah mm-hmm. broke her nose as well. Mm-hmm. Same
kick from Zaylee.
But yeah, so Mia Yim goes down. Io Shirai, great selling. She's obviously now got a... She should climb to the top of the ladder, but luckily, earlier on in the match, she had sold this hand injury from getting mm-hmm. slammed. And so she, you know... Obviously, the crowd give her a bit of leeway because everyone's just looking at what's happening with all the doctors around Mia Yim.
Yep.
And then she starts really struggling with the ladder because she can't use her hand.
Mm.
And I thought that was really good work on her part.
She did it because
that could have been really naff.
Yeah, and she did it enough to be like, she did it for the right amount of time.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was at the point where I was like, okay, I get what you're doing here now. So we like, what's happening? Because I just thought they would go to the finish. I thought they would hop, skip, and a finish now.
Considering what happened next, you think they would have just gone? Actually, would have just been better to just have a zip up there and just.
Yeah, I know. I was literally just expecting Io to get dragged off the ladder, and then Mia goes up, and this is what happens. Like, Leah gets dragged off, Mia goes up, then Io gets up and drags Mia off, gives her a German suplex, the running knees to the face. With the broken nose, and I know she like lands on her chest, but whatever. Then she goes up for a moonsault. They brawl. Mia falls to the outside. Dakota runs down to help her. They both eat a moonsault on the outside, which then leaves Io goes back in. She goes to climb the ladder. Dakota comes in. She takes Io out, puts Mia back in the ring. Mia begins to climb the ladder. You're thinking, okay, so she's fought through all of this pain, all of this kind of... It must have been so hard to breathe for most of that match.
Mm.
And then she gets halfway up the ladder. And who should come down to the ring but Kaylee Ray, the NXT UK Women's Champion, who hasn't been seen in NXT as far as I'm aware. And she tips the ladder over, throwing Mia Yim out over the top rope and through another ladder that's been like,
bridged there for ages. That is
an awful... looking bump.
Yeah, because she lands sort of
side
almost
on
in the air, like her legs are up in the air, and she almost takes it like, you know how some people take the Bailey to belly, like with their back sort of square, with their legs straight up, and so, yeah, and she just takes it, and actually as it lands, she goes through it so quickly, she just bounces about another 6 inches off. That was way worse than the nose. A nose really hurts, but it doesn't do anything.
I saw someone tweeting that like Mia Yim came out of that match worse off than either John Moxley or Kenny Omega did from their match. Like it was like,
oh yeah,
it heroic effort from Mia Yim in this also, match, by the way, like selling up a storm.
You know, Io Shirai took a big
taking a lump.
Io Shirai took that big German on the
it was a suplex yeah
took the big suplex as well. I mean that and
she got the overhead toss as well into the ladder, but she missed slightly.
Yeah, I thought
there were some really clever spots in this match, and they did some really fun stuff. They did a lot of like fun little, there was like a moment where Mia was putting a ladder in the ring and Io had been pulling one out from under the ring, and as Mia gets her ladder onto the apron and slides in, Io leaps up and does a sort of tiger feint kick round into the ladder, knocking it into Mia Yim. There was a lot of like little fun spots with the ladders that were clearly more fun to do and take than the suplex onto the ladder or the falling through a ladder on the outside bit or taking a ladder to the face. But I thought overall that all sold that this moment where you get this surprise debut And Kaylee Ray comes down and suddenly is the difference maker and seems like the new member of Team Baszler.
Mm.
It made that so much more impactful because the accidental, like, you know, the breaking of Mia Yim's nose made it even more kind of galling that this thing happened. I was so invested by that point of, like, I think just on a sort of, I was so surprised that the match went longer after, like, carried on after the nose break.
Yeah, I think, up until probably the suplex onto the ladder, I wasn't like, I didn't feel myself fully invested in the match. I thought the first half did drag. But as soon as that second half of the match, really, like you said, did everything it needed to do. And it really started. And I think sometimes, you know, you look back to other famous examples like Becky Lynch getting the bloody nose. And sometimes when those accidents happen, you know, they elevate the match and they elevate the stakes. And I think in this is one of those instances. Luckily, as far as we all know, she's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. But I thought overall the match actually, felt like it had real consequences. The only thing I thought was slightly strange was Dakota Kai's interference where she power bombs Io Shirai.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite a heelish.
I think it suggests that, like, the problem with that, I think part of Dakota's character has always been like she doesn't, like, she never is quite a closer. Like, she's always sort of, she's always been presented as kind of soft in certain ways. And I think this was suddenly that sort of, I need to prove to the other women on the roster that I am able to hang with them and I am willing to also go the distance for my friends. And for what the team, I think, and for like the team, I think is going to be good. Because now, you know, if Mia's got a broken nose, and like I don't know if the finish of that match was going to be like a big beatdown at the end on Mia or whatever it was. You know, something that would have written her out of War Games. Because now Dakota Kai feels like she's still very much involved in that storyline. So going forwards, does she like?
I thought what was interesting about it is like you could see it playing out as though. I mean, it's difficult to see it's playing out this way, considering the proper finish of the match. Mm. But at the moment, in that moment, I kind of thought, oh, this is interesting. Is she, in her attempts to help, is she actually hindering? And is that going to drive her away?
Yeah.
And that's going to be... So I thought all...
Pushing her to the dark
side. Yeah, I kind of thought the story... And this might still be the story they're telling.
Mm.
But it kind of felt to me that this was another little breadcrumb in the will she, won't she... sort of betray them in some way.
Yeah. And then you get Kaylee Ray, and so suddenly again, like, and it's one of those interesting debuts because obviously I don't know why I didn't see it coming. Because we've had Walter on NXT.
Like, I think to be fair, I think
I was Tony Storm was higher in my like higher up in my brain of people who would appear on NXT first than Kaylee Ray, and I don't know why.
Well, I think there's a couple. I think there's good reasons for thinking that way. One, which is they can't empty every brand of its stars and send them to other shows in the same 2-week period. You know, at some point, someone's got to appear on the show they're contracted to be on.
Yeah, no,
you know, no, I don't want to rock the boat. But I guess the other thing is that they've pushed so hard. Considering what's happened over the last 2 weeks of WWE programming and everything else, and NXT programming, you know, the obvious thing to do is to have someone from the main roster come down.
Yeah.
And in a way, you could argue that actually, because that was clearly the expectation they were setting, having someone then turn up from a lower brand actually, or a different brand, actually kind of still sort of takes away her thunder a little bit. Because if the expectation in some people's mind was Becky Lynch or Sasha, and they get who, but Kaylee Ray, great, and a cool moment, and you know, I think it's cool to throw in something interesting and keep pushing new talent. That's all good, but when you've got the commentators literally telling you, "I wonder if someone from Raw or SmackDown will come down tonight. Mm. Who could it be? Wonder if them another time. You know, the main roster. You know, they were here last week with H. You know, like they really pushed that.
But the mystery remains. I think that you know, Kaylee Ray being there doesn't actually solve the mystery because
no.
You know, we get the nice. So there's a nice. There's the moment at the end, the way the show finishes is that Io sat atop the ladder holding the symbolic briefcase, as it was known, the one that suggests that you've got the advantage in the War Games match. Bianca Belair's one side of the ladder, Kaylee Ray's on the other side of the ladder. Baszler's music hits. She walks out. Kaylee Ray gives her a little hi. And she's like, very well done. Big clap for all of you guys. I am brilliant. I told you to do that.
Yeah.
She's doing the Mr. Burns, I told him to do that. Yeah, yeah. But then, who walks out? Blooming Bayley, Shayna has had, obviously, dalliances with on SmackDown. Mm-hmm. She's had dalliances with Becky Lynch as well and is in the match post-TakeOver. So, like, this not only this final segment of NXT built to TakeOver War Games, it built to Survivor Series as well.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. And it's
like, I really liked it too.
I love the fact that also it was a return to NXT for Bayley. And obviously, she has had one return previously where they promised they were going to come and defend the women's tag team titles that never materialized. Mm-hmm. But it was a return for Bayley that they didn't pay off on any way. She didn't do any posturing. She didn't say anything to anyone. She just came out, hit her move, the sort of face driver. It's like a skull-crushing finale thingy. I don't know what they're calling it. And then just wanders off. And it took everyone like that. Like, she'd done the move before people clocked that it was Bayley, I think. People were still just sort of like, oh, it's Bayley's back. And then, she'd gone by that point.
I think it's great, isn't it, to... of all the people to come back with her new persona, to come back as a heel.
Yeah.
You know, Bayley is like, that's like so precisely the best one
and
to pick.
And I wonder if Izzy's going to change her look now. What's going to happen?
She's now a teenager now. She's a real bitch now. Just because Bayley.
But it suggests that, like, you know, it also puts the sort of, that Bayley and maybe some other members of the women's roster were the ones going around and beating up everyone backstage. Yeah. So that mystery remains to be is there to be solved next week. So I think next week we're going to get some sort of resolution and probably some invasion from the women's side of the main roster.
Yeah.
And it just leaves us at a really exciting juncture in NXT because we're building to two shows. And I think NXT is actually doing very well to acquit itself in simultaneously building to a whole weekend's worth of wrestling.
Yes. Yeah,
I feel very invested in War Games, and I feel equally as invested in NXT's stake in the Survivor Series stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think it's been as told as brilliantly as it did when Triple H had to rush job SmackDown when the Saudi stuff was happening. But I still think there's enough tantalizing match prospects on the cards for Survivor Series involving NXT.
Yeah.
That, you know, the smallest bit of build sells that to me already.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's funny thing, because Survivor Series has now become the sort of cherry on top, which is, War Games is shaping up to be, you know, it's currently shaping up to be one of the best pay-per-views NXT has ever put on, I think. In terms of, you know, they've been going longer on shows, so there's more investment in more storylines. And the one thing that all the takeovers have always had is they've kind of just had, three or four matches, maybe five matches. But really, it's two big narratives that your main events, and that's what we're all invested in. I feel like now we're able to get invested in more stuff. So now each thing really feels much bigger than it was before. And I think the balance of this card, any one of these matches could be match of the night. Yep. I think, you know, obviously the historic side of it with the first women's War Games. I just think the whole build in a broad sense is brilliant. And then to add to that, and we all know it's just because for the sake of it happening, but still, a couple of them are then just going to rock up to Survivor Series and probably have, I mean, the AJ Roddy Shinsuke match might be match. Could be match of the year already. Yeah. Like, you know, it's, you know, that's just a lot of fun to be had there, and I think it'd just be fun to just enjoy.
Well, we know Survivor Series doesn't really mean anything anymore because they were willing to just let Raw completely.
But I think
knock out SmackDown last year.
But and I think you're right. I think positive, and I think in this actual Survivor Series match, we're obviously going to be disappointed by how they treat the NXT talent.
Yeah,
but outside of that, I think, yeah, like you said, NXT is essentially booking its own pay-per-view, obviously, but then a bit like when a wrestler has to kind of carry the build for a match when the other wrestler isn't available because of injury or something, and they have to just do their own promos or whatever. It's like NXT is also sort of also building it just its own side for Survivor Series.
Yeah.
You know, without the input of anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of plate spinning, but they're nailing it. They're not. No, it's working.
Yeah. I'm so keen for next weekend and to see like everything that goes down.
Yeah. I like how some of the survivor stuff that's been happening, some of the invasion stuff has now correctly been used to give a bit of rub to some of the NXT guys already. They're already talking about it, using it. You know, not as if they're like so pleased to be there, but they're like, I like the fact that they're all of the superstars actually, their overall attitude is we are better and we are the main roster really kind of thing. I like that they've all kind of got that. No, I beat these guys, you didn't. You know, it's all smart and all very well done by NXT booking.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Let's go through some super chats now, just quickly. We've only got a few to go through, and then we will hop on to the rest of the show. So on the subject of AEW/NXT, Josh DeDominicus says, any chance we could have separate WrestleTalk Twitters made for live discussion on Twitter for AEW and NXT? I just don't want NXT ruined for me. I mean, potentially.
Problem is, though,
it's a Randy Andy Datsun question. Well, does a lot of the WrestleTalk
Twitters. I know, but also the issue is, though, ultimately, we're in the UK, and we talk about stuff that happens in America. So there will always be clashing time differences.
Yeah, we're already lagging behind.
Yeah, so I'm afraid that's sort of not really up to us, although we do sympathise with your issue.
So then we've got Jobber JJ coming in with Dijakovic babyface now, fighting and teaming with Lee. I don't think babyface. I think he's still annoyed at losing the North American title match. So I don't necessarily think that Dijakovic was necessarily a heel in his sort of matches with Keith Lee.
They were just. I think after they
took him. I think after they took him off NXT TV for a bit and he was injured and stuff, him returning was more just like, I'm a super athlete. And I think both him and Lee have been presented as super athletes. I think Lee is more babyface aligned.
Yes,
but I think that's it's more attitudinal than like he's actually like out and out a goody goody.
Yeah.
It's just I think he's so over. Yeah. He can only really be seen as a babyface, whereas I think Dijak, because of his character, seems like he might flip. But he's never I don't think he's done anything heelish since returning.
No, not really. He's been just a hard bastard. Yeah, exactly. He's you know, his style is very aggressive and so I love seeing Dijakovic on this. As much as I'm such a big fan of Keith Lee, I do think it's great that Dijakovic isn't just getting left behind, because ultimately he was 50% of those matches.
Yeah. I think he's awesome. I think both are amazing. Kevin asks, which member of the Undisputed Era do you think will lose his title first?
Oh, that is a good question. I can see Cole holding onto it for quite a while.
Roddy or Cole in my head. So I think...
Oh, you think Cole might lose it?
I think if you wanted to... I know obviously NXT does leave threads dangling every so often, but if you ever wanted to tie up a little loose thread, you could tie up the loose thread of like what was going on with Roddy and the other guys sort of bullying him about being the weak link in the group. And you could tie that up in two ways. You could tie that up in the way that Roddy loses the North American Championship and then the prophecy is suddenly unfulfilled. Or you could tell the story that Adam Cole loses the NXT Championship. And then that's when Roddy's like, but do you remember when you were having a go at me about being the weak link? You're now the weak link. And you could use that to separate Adam Cole out from the Undisputed Era. You could use it to separate Roddy for a bit. You could have a new fourth man in the group.
Yeah, this is it.
There's a little, because I think at some point, like this new era of NXT on USA has been defined by the Undisputed Era being the top faction and the top guys. So to cause friction amongst them is probably the next story.
Yeah.
Because them just being on the same page all the time as heels is kind of boring.
I know what you mean. Boring. But we're so used to seeing them now for so long, I guess is the thing. I would like to see them go up as a faction. Because generally speaking, do what got you to the dance.
Mm.
And I think, you know, they've all got the gold now. Ultimately, they need to find a way of engineering a strong way for them to essentially lose it all and go up. And I think they should go up in such a way that they bring some muscle with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think, just because of their size, I think they need some muscle. I think a Keith Lee turn would be perfect for that. I just think he has even though he's a babyface, I do think his attitude, he's got a swagger to him. He's definitely aggressive and cocky.
Bask in my glory.
Yeah,
is
he's
ego.
Cocky. Yeah, I like that about him. And I think he's the kind of person who, he's a good promo, but I think his character is like perfect sort of proving ground would be being in the Undisputed Era. A bit like with Roddy. You know, Roddy didn't find himself really as a character until he joined the Undisputed Era. Yeah. I think Keith Lee is sort of so close to being like them anyway that he could really
go the extra distance
and really bring that character out of him. I personally would like to see that. And I don't, maybe that does involve them losing a member, trading a member for Keith Lee, and that becomes a reason that, you know, Cole loses the title or Roddy loses the title, whatever. But I do think they do need to come up as a group, ideally with some muscle.
Skip on and go on with the rest of the show. So the show opens with a recap of last week and the OC coming down and taking on Ciampa, Riddle and Lee, and obviously Finn Balor's involvement in the end of that match. We then get an amazing match between Angel Garza versus Lio Rush for the Cruiserweight Championship. This match had me jumping out of my seat.
It's great.
Like, it's so good. It's so worth seeking out to watch this if you haven't seen it already. Garza comes out, is all swagger. His music's great. Gets a kiss off a granny. Lio comes out. His family are in the audience, like his two sons and his wife and his mum and his stepmum, and apparently his grandma's there. Flew in from
the
like
whole
Antigua
crowd is just
something.
Lio Rush's family. From England, was it, or something, at some point?
Yeah, I think his step family.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Which I just thought was really nice. But the match itself is just incredible. Some of the stuff they get up to, and there's so many like near falls, like just some of the. There's a bit where Lio goes for his, it's called the come up. It's like the wrecking ball dropkick bounce back thing where he catches him in a cutter. He goes to do that and Angel Garza just nails him in the back of the head with a double dropkick.
I mean, luckily Lio Rush is so flexible. He really takes it and like goes right forward like a car crash.
Yeah.
That
he whiplashes himself.
It's
an amazing spot. Yeah. There was also, Garza then misses a springboard moonsault and Lio hits this sort of swinging neck breaker, gets shoved down while going up the turnbuckle, and Garza then hits a like fall away moonsault power slam.
That was huge.
Thing that was popped the crowd massively. Yeah. Like there are so many good little spots in this.
We
can't go through all of them.
Yeah, at one point Lio Rush goes to dive through the middle of the ropes and Garza power slams on the ramp.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just... Whoosh.
Yeah, just flips him over immediately.
Great match.
Both guys put everything out there, I think. For
interesting
match.
Interesting with Angel Garza, because it was only, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago that all his promos for him, the interstitial things, were, you know, this is from a legendary wrestling family. Yeah. You know, he's doing it for his family. He's doing it, you know, he's doing it for all the right reasons. Like, super babyface. Mm-hmm. And then... Every time he's come out, he's been much more heelish and cocky, and I'm just a very sexy man, and take my trousers off in front of your wife.
Yeah, so like he goes into the crowd and takes his trousers
off. So I'm glad they've settled into this part of his character, because I think he's great at this. He also I realise now who he looks like.
Yeah.
Colin Farrell.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
He looks loads like Colin Farrell.
Mm. I think he's got, like, there is, you know, an Eddie Guerrero-style swagger to this guy, I think, and he's got, like... And I think, obviously, WWE probably just go like, yes, exactly. But it's that he's just got this presence about him. And this match put him over, even in a loss, put him over massively. Because it felt like I genuinely bought into the idea that Angel Garza could win it. Like,
oh, gotcha.
Multiple times. Yeah. There's a bit towards the end where Leo hits the come up, finally, after teasing it for the whole match. And then he keeps hold of Garza's head in like a cravat. And he goes, then slaps him and then goes for it again, but gets caught coming back up. And Garza hits the wing clipper, his like whatever rampage DDT thing. And it's a super close two. And I was like, is this the end of the match? Because then he tries to like get him up. And I was like, he tries to get him on the second rope to do one, like an avalanche.
Do a big
version.
One, yeah.
And then it's like a Rana out of that. Leo hits the final hour. Frog splash, gets close to, hits another one as Garza comes up. And then the end of the match, Leo rolls him up there because Garza was climbing up the ropes to get to his feet, and Leo hits the final hour as he's doing that. Garza collapses, but Garza's foot's on the rope at two.
Ref doesn't see it.
And the ref doesn't see it, so then he counts the three. Leo wins, but Garza's like...
Now...
Dude.
I will say that I don't think it ever works when the... You give ostensibly you have the heel get that sort of, you know, that should be the other way around.
I think normally NXT has done it before with, like, they did it with the Undisputed Era and the blind tag in the Street Profits match, I believe. Like, NXT will play into that, and I think it works if the person's over enough. I don't think Garza's like, he's cocky. I don't think he's like out and out here.
I do think
he's a bit of a show off and a bit of, you know,
yeah, it is with it. It's
snaky.
I don't think I'm not a fan who kind of looks at everything through like the old school lens. I think I'm not like that at all. But the one thing I do for some reason just care about is I do really care about who's a heel and who's a face.
Yeah.
I just think it's really important for storytelling.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes playing with that, it's just kind of like there's a million things you could do. So I just don't get why you would do this one.
Well, the reason we do that is because then we elongate this feud.
Yes,
and
I know that.
I'm keen, like, you know, I think they don't want to... It's a tricky position because Leo Rush made his big return to NXT and he was saying, you know, the whole time that he was getting told off on Raw and stuff was because he was saying, you know, I should be in the ring. I could be a future star. And Leo Rush's comeback in NXT has been the story of, you know, Triple H turning to him and saying, okay... Well, show me what you got. So they're not going to take that away from him now because this is his first defense as well. Yeah. Like, he's had two matches against Raul Mendoza on 205 that they flagged up. But like, yeah, this is kind of the big proving session for him as champion, and that's why, you know, his family's been flown and stuff. So,
But ultimately, he didn't actually win. Technically
not. But then
it's kind of like it's a bit odd. Like, now what do you do?
Book it for TakeOver.
But if you do the rubber match, and which they're obviously going to have to do, you know, if Leo loses, then he looks weak.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, well, you didn't win the first time either. If Angel Garza loses, well, then he wasn't ever going to win. Do you know what I mean? It's just a slight. I'm reading too much into it. I know.
Yeah, I think it will work, and I think it's a quick way to book a match for a takeover if that's what they're going to do with it. Yeah. And I think, you know, when you've got literally in one of your matches all of your men's champions except Lio Rush.
Yeah, yeah.
You probably need a Lio Rush match on this takeover.
I love seeing Lio Rush back in the ring as well. He just shouldn't be someone's manager. He's too good.
Like, he is really
good. I love his final hour splash is awesome. Mm. You know.
I love the Matrix. He does a Matrix escape at the beginning of this and slides under the arm and then pops up at the other end. I think his offense is really cool.
Yeah, he's really
cool.
And
these two work together brilliantly as well. So I would love to see them have the scope and what will they do on a takeover? Because this obviously was an amazing opening match for this show. But when they're going to go, let's turn that up to 11 on a takeover to open War Games, say, if it's not going to be the War Games match opening the show, what will they do?
Mm. Exciting.
After that, before the break, we saw Tegan Nox and Rhea Ripley down outside. Full Sail and started the whole sort of what's happening on the women's side mystery. We got a brilliant recap package of what Baszler was doing when she was on her sabbatical to Raw and SmackDown, showing up in Becky Lynch's sit-down interview, attacking Sasha Banks and Bayley at the end of a match. We then got Xia Li versus Aaliyah and the first nose break of the evening.
Yeah.
It was a perfectly fine match, really. There's not a huge deal to say about this. They seem to be pushing up. The reason I wasn't so sure that this was like a legit nose break was because I just thought they were putting over Xia Li quite hard.
Yeah, I don't know where, because
I didn't think Aaliyah was like bleeding. And then when they had a doctor run down, they had someone run down from the back holding like an ice pack. I was like, is there just like a blood capsule in that? Because then she was sort of dabbing at herself.
Yeah, I don't.
So it seemed like it looked like a work, but then I think afterwards people said it's not.
Yeah,
so.
She said on Twitter that she has broken her nose. Mm. But I think, yeah, it was just odd because did it happen with the finishing kick?
I think so. Yeah,
because I think just from the camera angle, it didn't look like it hit her in the face.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? So I didn't. I just thought she was just selling. It sort of didn't realize. It might have happened even before then. We just didn't realize. But yeah, it was an okay match.
It was quite a flat little hook kick as well. Mm. It's like Xia Li's little heel kick to the face. Yeah. It was
Xia Li's got. I love Xia Li's kicks. I love her offense. Yeah. There was quite a few sort of whiffed kicks in this throughout. They didn't have the greatest chemistry. And I think this is the point where you realize. You do get reminded every again that this is still also developmental territory, and there are still developmental matches on here.
Yeah,
but I think did we see Aaliyah before when she was? Did she used to wrestle in Progress at all?
I don't know. No,
I feel like we've seen it as another. We might have seen her somewhere before at the UK somewhere, but I think she's got a cool character. I like her team that she's got. I think they're good backstage. I think Xia Li's offense is really cool. They've both got a lot of potential, I think. It's obviously early days for both of them.
I thought overall it was good.
It just had a few kind of odd timing moments.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where they need to decide. Like, I think Aaliyah has been earmarked, clearly, and Vanessa Bourne have been earmarked as enhancement talent kind of vibe for a long time now.
Yeah.
But Xia Li, I would like them to decide what they're going to do with her, because she's been floating around in NXT for quite a while, just having this match where she comes out, does the chants, and there's no story, there's no progression. She just gets a win. And it's like, I get that some people will always be in that position, but it would be interesting to see Xia Li at least, I don't know, step up the next level of competition and see what she can do if she was against a... Bianca Belair.
Yeah, and I think this is the second week in a row now, because it happened with the match last week as well, the women's sort of singles match, which was that the commentators from earlier started saying, they're both hoping to impress Shayna Baszler. Maybe there's still could get in the slot, which I understand why they're saying that, but also I'm just kind of like, it's obvious that that's what this is for.
It's not going to be Aaliyah, is it?
I think, yeah, and I just, but also I think...
Put it back in the cupboard.
But I think it's also good, it would be better for them to say... Now, of course, with War Games coming up, there'll be a vacuum for the contenders, sort of top contenders.
There's a lot of matches, yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be a vacuum for the top contender spot. So I think you could start plugging that up, even if, again, it's just for the sake of giving some stakes to match for no reason. Mm-hmm. If they were saying instead, they're all hoping that after War Games, they're going to be next in line, and this is the time to show yourself to be the next contender. I think that's a much better reason to have these matches than... Oh, please, Shayna.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
when
that's,
Zaire leaves a face as well.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I do think that's a bit of an error on their part. I think that's not the best reason for these two to have a match.
No, they are just having a match at the end of the day. We then got a Killian Dane versus Pete Dunne package, and then we saw Killian Dane trying to warm up his broken fingers backstage. Then Finn Balor's music hits, and he wanders out doing the whole I've got a new entrance, which is just about me. It's all about me.
I like it.
And who's which guy's got two fingers and a new entrance?
This guy. I like that angle they do, seeing his logo.
And he's doing the fingers thing. Yeah. I really liked it. So Finn starts cutting a promo. He says, is this it? Is this what NXT is now? What happened to this place? What happened to the business? I used to be proud of this place, but now it's a joke. You got guys like Johnny Gargano, the heart of NXT, who's still sore about something that happened 3 weeks ago. And then he starts going, you know, he said, when I left, a bunch of little boys moved in. Yeah. And don't get me started on that Matt Riddle chat, because he got a slap last week and he's now hurting. Riddle slides into the ring behind him and they start brawling. Riddle's mostly on top for this brawl. It's like it's very much Riddle in control. They go outside on the barricade. Riddle does his big sort of chest kick and sends Balor flying over the thing. Balor just runs.
Yeah.
Riddle gets on the mic and says, listen here, you putts. Like, yeah, I'm waiting for you.
That was suffering succotash territory. Yeah. He's not, that insult could have gone.
You can't run forever, you putts.
But also, but like,
you dirty ref.
Yeah, that's not really what a putts is for a start. But I like the fact that he did that in front of a very clear channel between the barrier and the crowd. That he could have just walked up to Balor and hit him anyway. He's like, yeah, you come back here. It's like, you could just walk there.
I haven't got my flip-flops on. I took my outdoor shoes off.
Yeah, that was a bit odd. But I like the build that they're both having. I like sort of, I guess, Riddle. It's funny, Riddle has sort of found himself nearly in about three feuds.
Yeah.
And at some point, they've just sort of gone, well, just have a match with Balor. Mm-hmm. That'll be the feud.
Yeah.
You know, but there's, but no...
Is this something to do with Gargano? Is this a replacement
This is the thing. I do think this all does seem slightly oddly placed. Yeah. I'm perfectly happy for it to happen, but there doesn't seem to be any particular reason it's happening.
Yeah. Is Gargano injured? I don't know.
Like, I don't know. Do you know what I mean, though? Riddle sort of nearly had a feud for...
Like, with a few people, yeah.
With a few people, and he's never quite...
He's a good showcase match guy, and that's what this whole thing kicks off into, because then the Undisputed Era come out and they say, like, oh, you just made a big mistake, Riddle, coming out here, because now we've got you in the ring, and you saw what we did on Raw, you saw what we did on SmackDown. We are the most dominant force, not just in NXT, in all of WWE. But then when they get in the ring to try and beat Riddle down, Ciampa comes out, as does Keith Lee. They get in the ring and they start having this sort of war of words with the Undisputed Era. And I think Lee cuts across it amazingly as they're doing this promo about how they're the most dominant force in WWE. Lee just goes, I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
And he says,
I like it. He's chose his words very carefully at this point.
Yeah.
He says,
get your asses in the ring.
I was going to say, because he
I'll
says.
Give you a little appreciation, though, and he puts over Adam Cole.
Well, this is. So, yeah. So he says, you know, credit, so something like credit where credit's due. You beat Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
You know,
and you didn't back down from
and
Seth
you
Rollins.
Did, I just thought it was a very carefully worded phrase. You didn't back down from Seth Rollins. It's like, okay.
Yeah. And you didn't back down from Seth Rollins, who's very scary.
Yeah, he's a big mean man. So, well, congratulations on that.
A referee called off a whole match with Seth Rollins because he used a hammer.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
I like how, I like the way Lee sort of strode forward to sort of say, no, I'm going to talk now.
Oh, he's the promo man. And I think he's much more suited to that, like, to that role. And it builds sort of an exciting moment, because, like, he's saying to Cole, like, you know, feel free to step in the ring whenever you want to. I'm right here.
Yeah.
Roddy cuts across and he's doing amazing, snarky Roddy Strong.
Petulant Roddy Strong is the best. It's so good.
Because he says, you shut your mouth. You shut it. This man deserves respect.
Yeah.
He's been on Raw, he's been on SmackDown, he's been on NXT. He deserves a night off.
Yeah, he's like Scrappy Doo.
Yeah, he is. But the combination of him doing that with Fish in the background. Just you tell him, Roddy.
Yeah. Like, you see it also with Fish, like, so when Keith Lee drew the line in the ring with his foot, was like, come on then. And Fish was going, yeah, we'll cross that line. We'll cross that line. Yeah, we'll cross that line.
Stepping back the whole time. I think as a foursome, they're amazing.
They're all so good.
Like, they're so funny at putting over just
how petulant
silly and petulant and petty they are. So yeah, that's it. Lee draws a big line in the sand with his feet. Fish says, "We'll cross that line." Riddle takes off Lee's jacket and
So
then the Undisputed Era go to get off the apron, and to end going into the break, Lee just walks up, grabs Roddy, and just chucks him into the ring. It's like, well, we're having this match now, whether you like it or not. Surprise, surprise, back from the break, the match is on. This was about Lee being in control for most of the match and Roddy trying to survive. The story they were telling on commentary as well was that for every four moves that Roderick Strong hits, Lee hits one, and it's just as devastating. Yeah. And I really, really liked it. I thought there was some really fun stuff they were doing. There was a bit where like Roddy had this huge flurry of moves and Lee just hits him with a Grizzly Magnum out of nowhere, knocking him back. Roddy bounces off, hits a knee, and then Lee ends up in the ropes and Roddy starts doing his running forearms off the, you know, across the ring. And as he comes up back off like the third one or whatever, Lee just nails him with an inside-out clothesline. Yeah.
The
drop kick, he goes for a sick kick and Lee swats him out of the air with the Grizzly Magnum as well, which I just thought was awesome.
The mid-air, I always forget that he calls the... Because in commentary, they keep calling it the palm strap, but it is the Grizzly Magnum. Given that the name. So he hits that and you just see... First of all, the noise is like a gun going off.
Yeah.
But you just see the sweat just go off of Roddy. It just looks so painful.
Yeah.
I got
slapped by Rampage Brown yesterday and I was wearing a t-shirt. I can't imagine what it feels like being slapped by Keith Lee, two-handed on your chest in midair.
And also, Rampage Brown barely touched you.
Yeah. He wasn't trying. He was like, I'm just going to give you caved your chest in. I'm still hurting today.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah, and then the match goes on. Roddy hits the amazing superplex off the top, which I think defies the laws of physics.
I mean, that's how good Keith Lee is. He's so big, but I guess he's 6'2", so he's not massively tall, but he's so big and so athletic that he can from the second rope just launch himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Roddy is obviously also a great athlete as well, and I just think. You know, he's able to just make everyone else look so good through being able to, you know, it makes Roddy look superhuman for being able to do it to him. And I just thought, Keith Lee's just so, he can have such great chemistry with so many different kinds of wrestlers.
Mm.
You know, he can just play the big guy. Like in this one, he was just sort of playing the big man.
Yeah.
You know, a lot more. And I do think they
didn't do a lot of his flippy stuff or anything like
which
that.
I think, to be fair, you know, as much as I'm kind of, I like his flippy stuff and I like seeing that. But I think actually... They're right to just to bring it out. Don't have to bring it out every week.
When it's impressive, yeah. Yeah. And here, and that wasn't the story here. The story here wasn't that Lee didn't need to go the flips and stuff is like Lee going to a level.
Yes.
Like he's going up a level to match somebody else. Whereas here, because he was in control, he didn't even need to get out of like second gear.
Mm.
It was kind of the point,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So anyway, after that big inside out clothesline that Lee hits that just flips Roddy's world upside down. The rest of the Undisputed Era come down, but Ciampa and Riddle cut them off on the way to the ring and start beating people up. Cole super kicks Ciampa. Riddle chucks Fish over the steps and dives onto him with a forearm. But as he does that, Balor runs down. He hits the sling blade on Riddle as he stands up. Double stomps him on the floor and then does the shotgun drop kick into the stairs, which is awesome. This all distracts Keith Lee. I was like, oh, okay, so it's another distraction finish for the Undisputed Era. So, like, Roddy then hits a jumping knee to the face in the Olympic Slam. But Keith Lee kicks out too.
Mm.
And then that allows him to get up. He ducks a kick, rolls him up a bit, and then puts him in the limit breaker and gets 1-2-3.
Mm.
So that, to me, the story that I'm reading here is that post-war games, Keith Lee must be in line for a one-on-one North American title shot.
Yeah, that's kind of the connection I drew.
Mm.
And I thought, I always love his finisher.
Mm.
It's perfect for him, isn't it?
Yeah.
But
that's like Jackhammer.
Yeah.
Dubry.
I think that makes total sense. I think it makes perfect sense.
I'd love to see more of that match. I would love to see. Yeah. Like I said, that I think they did well in the first match that they had as well. If you are building to this match at some point, they did well in the first match where it was the Dijak, Lee, and Roddy match too. Keep Roddy out of the mix so you don't waste all of the potential of Keith Lee versus Roderick Strong or Dijak versus Roderick Strong in a one-on-one environment. And they just concentrated on Lee and Dijak doing their thing, which I think will also play into the War Games match because after this moment where Lee picks up the win, everything breaks down. Undisputed Era jump Lee and Ciampa. Riddle's completely taken out because of Balor's interference. So it becomes a 4-on-2 beatdown brawl. But who comes out to make the save? But Dominik Dijakovic, who seemingly takes ages to get to the ring. I think he does his full entrance quietly. Because the crowd were already like, they were chanting, yeah. Feast Your Eyes. And I was like, where is he? And then they cut to him and he does his onto the top rope thing that he does, which is a really cool part of his entrance. Mm. But he did that to get into the ring. And he handily dispatches the entire Undisputed Era. He tips Roddy out. He hits a double choke slam on Red Dragon. And then he catches Cole's super kick and puts him straight into the Feast Your Eyes.
Yeah.
And it's just, I just thought this was such a great little like addition to this squad. When I was thinking like I was going to be Ciampa, Riddle, Lee, and Dijak, I was like, that is a cool team, and I can't wait to see what they do. So Postal like scaring off the Undisputed Era, Dijak goes over to Ciampa, shakes his hand, seemingly joining the team. He says, "If you're going to war, count me in."
Mm-hmm.
Shakes his hand. He's part of the team. Turns to just like leave and just walks straight into Lee, who's already staring him down. And then Lee offers the handshake. They shake hands. It's a big heartwarming moment. Everyone was going, hug it out.
Because it's great because their rivalry has been just a proper rivalry.
Yeah.
There's not been any, you did this to me, so whatever. It's just been, no, we're just competing to be the best crazy athletic big guy.
It like, kind of feels like Sheamus and Cesaro's feud where they did the best of seven or whatever it was. And that turned into people wanting to see them together.
Yeah.
And like people
were
like, you know, actually, I think you've just earned enough mutual respect here that you could just be mates.
Yeah.
And you could be a team. Like they could go on to be a tag team if they wanted to.
That's the one thing. I don't want to see them as tag team. I think they could both thrive on the main roster.
Yeah. I think they could orbit each other.
Yes.
Forever. It feels like that sort of like, I think in the same way that Ciampa and Gargano have that chemistry, that like I think their careers will always forever kind of orbit.
Yeah, because you think, you know, you could be looking at a year's time and let's say they're going to have a match at a big pay-per-view, you know, you can still be playing stuff from PWG, you know, of them having these sort of legendary matches. I think you're right. I think they've got enough history now that they can just sort of semi-regularly intersect with each other and either have matches or have alliances or
and
not.
I think people go crazy for that. And so then they shake, and that's kind of what leads us into the break. We found out later that in the sort of break, WWE.com exclusive, as they're walking up the ramp, Riddle says to them all, I actually just want a match with Balor, so I'm quitting the team.
Mm-hmm.
This is then announced later in the show that says like Matt Riddle's taken out of the match and Dijak is taking his place. So there is still a place open on Team Ciampa, which feels like it's tailor-made for Johnny Gargano, but...
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, it'll be very satisfying if it is, but I think sometimes you can almost, I guess, signpost it a bit too much.
Yeah, I'd love it to be a surprise. And they could have, you could have also just left out the, you could have announced the Riddle match and had him doing double duty and then taking him out of the War Games match or whatever, like on the night even, and said he was too injured to compete and so we've signed up.
Yeah,
you signed up Johnny instead.
It just feels like Johnny has been mentioned so much in the Balor promos that it seems more likely he will.
Well, I felt that was more the feud they were building to.
That's
I wanted to see Johnny versus Balor at TakeOver, but maybe they've decided that's too big a match to just do as Balor's first feud.
Or maybe Johnny is injured.
Yeah, maybe Johnny is injured.
But I don't know. Yeah, it just seemed like it seems a little.
We'll be getting super chats telling us that he is. I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, so. After that, we see that there was more happening backstage after the break. Duke and Shafir are down outside the arena, as is Candice. Scarlett Bordeaux was weirdly there. Triple H is out there asking for security. We then go into a match versus Isaiah Swerve Scott versus Bronson Reed. This was just a match. It was just a match. It wasn't as exciting as I thought it was going to be.
They had some good spots.
This is the point where I really noticed also that there was like a couple of front row CM Punk t-shirts.
Really?
And I was like, ah, okay.
So I kept noticing.
So he's allowed back on the air, is he now? Yeah.
I kept noticing the guy dressed as Hulk Hogan, who just wasn't really. He just sat down the whole time. But normally, the guys who dress up like that are quite like, ooh, me. But the whole time, he was just sat, relaxed, watched. I don't even think he knew he was dressed up.
Post controversy, Hulk
Hogan. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's a very specific era of Hulk Hogan. This match was like, it was all about mutual respect, and it was just two guys going out there and doing their specific things. And Nigel said it quite brilliantly in the beginning, that it was like, it was size and power versus speed and adaptability or creativity, I think
you
said.
Not Bronson not being as hard hitting. It was a shame, actually. It was like Bronson wasn't as hard hitting as I like to see him being, and sort of Scott wasn't quite as
flippy
and fast as we know. Yeah, it was a good match. I enjoyed it,
but there was a lot of sitting on him.
The sitting was good. I like that.
Yeah, the bunzai drops. And yeah, I like the bit where he came off the ropes and literally just sat on him for like good 30 seconds.
Yeah, it was a good match. And I think
it's a weird fetch to have.
These are two
someone's
talents.
Someone's going to have it.
Yeah, exactly. These are two talents that are obviously kind of in that developmental space on the NXT roster. Not as in their developmental, as in NXT is good at keeping their, sort of lower mid card, looking competitive, looking strong. They don't give them. You know, nothing matches. You know. I think this.
Well,
was
Scott had a match against Roddy that made him look really good. He's won in a few on the trot. Like, I think Swerve's looking like someone who's going to be a big deal on NXT.
Yeah, I think Bronson Reed will find himself. Whenever I think what's quite obvious is whenever this current crop of the top of the system goes up to the main roster in any kind of sort of large way, whether it's the whole of the Undisputed Era or whether that's, you know, Lee and Riddle or whoever combination of people they decide are going to go up, it does feel like they're quite well set up now for the likes of, you know, Scott and Bronson, those in that level to kind of Angel Garza.
To start filling the roles. They've got a lot of people on the back burner. And I think this felt like a sort of maybe 50% of what they could do match. It was that sort
of,
that feeling. And it was like, there was a few teasers of big things that I was like, oh my God. And
no, then he was going to do, look like he was going to do
like tombstone off the top. And then Swerve flips out of that, hits a kick, and then does a DDT. But basically by that time, Bronson's already on the floor. So it wasn't even like an elevated DDT. It was like everything was almost, it was like they were saving it for something, but you don't know what they're saving it for. I felt the finish fell a little bit flat as well, because it was just the, it's the house call, he calls it, isn't it? Which is the sort of jumping spin kick, the sort of like back kick to the back of the head kind of thing.
It's a bit strange. I love Bronson's finisher, the
Omori driver.
Yeah.
It's like almost a dead eye, but
It's basically an unprotected dead eye.
And that we got close to. And then, so Scott comes through looking for Hokarana, gets caught, goes for a triangle, gets picked up into a powerbomb. He kicks out of that, like flips out of that. He hits kicks, a sunset flip, dodges the bonsai drop, and then does this house call kick, and it's 1-2-3. And I just felt like it was like, that wasn't quite as impactful a finish as I wanted. But it was a perfectly fine match.
Yeah.
They shook hands. They both looked like good competitors. I'm just still waiting for the Swerve story to begin.
Yeah.
Because I think he's had so much, he's so charismatic and really got like a presence to him that from the moment he was sort of in the breakout tournament, I was so surprised they didn't do anything with him in the breakout tournament, push him further through it. I would really, really like to see them actually turn up on him and be like, let's actually put this on the boil now rather than like keeping it on the back burner.
The good news, I think, you know, they're having these matches like this. I think this will develop, maybe not necessarily these two specifically, but they'll develop a feud of some description. Mm-hmm. You'll start seeing, I'd like to see, you know, Swerve Scott get a bit of promo time.
Yeah.
Do a bit of talking. He's got a great personality. So it's just seems this is a very serviceable encounter.
What do you think about the thick logo on the old singlet?
I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was good.
Fair enough.
Not a fan?
Not massively, no.
Okay.
I understand. It's not really my thing. But
I can't say I'm particularly passionate about it.
No, I thought it was okay. Yeah, it's okay. Resident thick boy. Anyway, then Kathy Kelly is up in the weird crow's nest thing. She says that everyone's on high alert after all the attacks, as you can no doubt imagine. Says that Finn Balor will take on Matt Riddle at TakeOver War Games. He will be taken out of the War Games match and replaced with Dijak, so there's still one spot left on Ciampa's team. It's also announced, I don't know if it was announced here or if it was announced later, that Adam Cole will be taking on Dijak in a ladder match to decide the advantage in the War Games match. I think it might have been announced slightly later on.
Oh, really? Why have they put Cole in that?
Just because it's Cole, isn't it?
They've done this a few times. I wouldn't personally regularly put the champion and leader of the group, of the cocky, petulant group, in the match. I think he would send
Roddy. But Roddy's already done a match, so.
Well, then put Kyle O'Reilly in.
Yeah.
Or Bobby Fish. I don't really, yeah.
They don't necessarily like matches where Fish and O'Reilly are separate, though.
I know. I don't know why. you know,
those matches in progress are really good on his own.
But also, like, Kyle O'Reilly did have quite a few singles matches, but only when Fish was injured. As soon as Fish came back, he wasn't allowed to have singles matches
anymore.
I mean,
to be fair, they probably said there's a ladder match for the North America, there's a ladder match for the advantage in War Games, and Kyle O'Reilly remembers the last ladder match he was in and went,
nah,
no effing way.
Yeah, I don't
know. My back has barely recovered.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult line.
It's okay, Kyle, you've done your time.
Yeah. I think it's a difficult line to toe to be, on the one hand, we're the cocky heels who like to gang up and win by any means necessary, and we're all about the gold. And then also be, you know, I'm going to do this on my own. Don't worry, guys, I've got this unnecessarily dangerous match just before a big thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I feel like you should send. Like, and also, like, let's not lose opportunities to put over other members of the Undisputed Era.
You know, I think also because they can all be helped by, like, there's going to be interference in this match, like, without a doubt.
Yeah, and the same way, like, I don't know why Shayna had that match last week.
Mm.
Why didn't, what, do you know what I mean? See, I think they needed a bit more, like, no, we're the captains and the leaders. We send you to do our work for us.
We're the final bosses.
Yeah. There needs to be a little bit more of that, I think. Yeah.
We then got a Forgotten Sons promo where they say they're the Savages of NXT and they've got a lot of
beards.
They've got a lot of beards. They're standing in some sort of mechanics yard, motorbike thing. Sons of Anarchy. Mayans, that's on USA. Yeah. Something. TV show tie-in down the line. I don't know. Forgotten Sons. Anyway, then we get Pete Dunne versus Killian Dane, or do we? Because as Killian Dane makes his entrance, Damian Priest, attacks...
Punishment Martinez
attacks him on the ramp. Priest then calls out Pete Dunne and they brawl. Dane then rushes in, and I was like, oh, this is a War Games triple threat being set up, surely. Like, this must now be a War Games triple threat. Security comes, drags them apart. Security, annoyingly, can't control things. They're then basically just holding Dunne still while Damian Priest kicks his head off.
Yeah.
He then...
Well, he's basically got the Trouble in Paradise, but he happens to be 6'6".
He's like 6'9", yeah, and just lifts 1 foot, like, a tiny bit, and just nails your face. Yeah, but the security are basically holding him in there. He then beats up security, does a crucifix bomb on one of them to everyone on the outside, knocking down Dunn and Dane and all of the security. Dunn and Dane then get up and they're sort of like...
I love this, by the way. This moment was great where they'd separately both had a fight with Damian Priest, would then happen to be knocked out near each other, both sort of get up and realise they're near each other and just start punching each other.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a really funny little moment.
And so then Priest decides he's going to hit his, like, springboard, tope,
whatever that thing
whatever
is.
Is him pretending he's Grand Metal League.
Yeah.
And does that. And he walks up the ramp, stands tall, and it's like, boom, Damian Priest is here. And he gets, like, big Damian Priest chants. Like,
he looked great.
He looked amazing in this segment. And I the transformation, I think, since... You know, I think everyone was a little bit down on Damian Priest, the character, when he first re-debuted. Like, I was like, the vignettes and all that stuff for him, I didn't like.
Yeah.
I didn't really like the series of squash matches he had because they didn't show off what he could actually do. We hadn't seen enough Punishment Martinez in NXT anyway, really, to be, like, missing it. So I just didn't really get who he was.
Yeah.
And then the Dunn match where he, you know, kicked him in the balls and stuff, that was suddenly where I was like, oh, okay, I get who he is now. And since then... He's been rock solid.
I think they just tried to... I will say until my dying day that changing his name from Punishment Martinez, which is the best name of all time, was an error. However, I think they just made his character more subtle and more natural. You know, they were trying to really push that he was some sort of gothic sex man. And it was just like... Those characters... I just don't think those characters... Sometimes... It's funny, isn't it, with NXT? Like, you know, sometimes fantastical characters like the Vaudevillains...
Mm.
Get over really well in the NXT crowd because there's a sense of sort of irony there. It's just fun in the room, you know. There's those sort of things can really get over in a smaller venue.
I think, however, if it plays into a style though, because I think the Vaudevillains, at least their offense was like a sideshow.
But I don't think
boxing match.
But I think that gothic, vampiric, sexy people in wrestling is such a done thing that the crowd never took to that as a thing. And I think that, yes, he still has that. He still talks about
He looks like he runs the Vampire Club from Blade. Like,
yeah.
If you scan a UV light over him, you'd see the weird rune.
Exactly,
or
yeah. But I think they just made it more subtle, a bit more in his natural wheelhouse. And it's just taken away those weird questions.
But I also think, like, if you've been calling him the Archer of Infamy for the whole time.
I don't understand that,
which,
by the way.
I do now. Like, the point was that he was kind of like... he's trying to become infamous through beating people like of a certain level. And it makes much more sense when he's going after Pete Dunne and Killian Dane. And, you know, like he said, after the match with Pete Dunne, is like, I'm going to take your reputation. I'm basically going to absorb kind of the kudos for beating you. That all makes much more sense now. But like calling the Archer of Infamy and he's squashing some random dude, you're like, oh.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry, Raul Mendoza. You know.
Stop having to go around the second time you've done
it. No, I said, you leave him alone. I mentioned Raul Mendoza's name earlier. I don't think I'm going with him. So then we get Kathy Kelly interviewing Mia Yim and Dakota Kai coming, saying she'll have her back. And then it was announced that Adam Cole would take on Dijak for the War Games advantage in a ladder match. And then it was Mia Yim versus Io Shirai in. I just can't believe they finished the match.
Hmm.
And in a really fun ending. So overall, I think the episode of NXT this week was really, really good. I think it was like, it had a very clear-cut story running all the way through it that like things and tensions across the board in all the roster, I think across the whole roster, are sort of boiling over in the build-up to War Games as everyone is itching to get their hands on each other. And that was told in the Damian Priest, Killian Dane, Pete Dunne bit. It was told in the men's side with Ciampa and Roddy and Lee and Riddle and the rest of the Undisputed Era. It was told with Finn Balor coming out. It was told on the women's side of things with this whole everyone's been beaten up. And then the final match with Mia Yim and Io Shirai and the interference from Kaylee Ray. It just really felt like everyone is so ready for it to be War Games. That I'm actually almost kind of like, I don't want next week. I don't necessarily need an episode next week. I'd rather we just hop skip or we just at War Games.
It's 2 weeks, isn't it?
It's next weekend.
Yeah. So it's not this not this weekend coming.
We've got one more episode of NXT.
See, we were just saying before we came on air to do this that it almost feels like they've got 1 week too many to build all this. Like they've sort of stretched everything. I think by next week they would have sort of stretched everything to its limit. But clearly next week is going to have some sort of massive announcement with the extra member of the Keith Lee team.
Mm-hmm.
So they've saved the... So it won't matter because hopefully that'll be a massive thing.
Yeah.
No idea who that'll be.
Can't be Johnny because we've had a super chat in from Ryan Kester who says, just to confirm via his Twitter, Gargano is out of a neck injury. And Pete said he can confirm. He said he was heartbroken about missing TakeOver.
Okay. So that's why the slightly rushed job... We'll switch Riddle into that place.
Who's it going to be?
I think they'll bring someone down. I mean, maybe, you know what? Maybe they actually, just to continue it, it'll go no.
Neville.
No. Kenny Omega.
It's Kenny Omega.
Maybe just for the sake of...
Okada.
Just for the sake of continuing it, just for its own sake, they could almost... have AJ or one of the club turn up and just so they're there to have a thing with Balor at some point.
It would be interesting to have like a ringer in this like scenario because I'm not necessarily sure who else.
Triple H.
I mean,
well, I've said it now.
Why not? You've said it now. It's come to fruition. Say it three times in a mirror and he'll be the world champion. That's what I've heard about Triple H. So I think overall I'd probably give that show a 4 out of 5 on the low scale of 4 though because I think while... the bookends of each, like, so the beginning and the end were great, and the middle section at this sort of 1 hour mark was also awesome. I thought some of the matches in the middle weren't everything they could have been.
I think now they've gone longer on the format, you are starting to see that some of those developmental matches, actually, sometimes people should only get 2 minutes rather than 4.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's, it's not killing the show by any means, but I think this is, again, the same as last week. It just had a couple of slight momentum stops. So I'd give it like just below
it's
a 4
like
out of
5.
High
dip, high dip, high. And I would like to see a show that's much more just on a, like a... Like a
nice build.
Yeah, a nice build to something crazy. And I'm kind of interested to see what they do next week, but I very much am in the mindset at the moment that maybe it should just be next weekend already and we should just be doing TakeOver now because I don't know what they're going to do with this ladder match. But it's time to get into the super chats before we close out the show. So let's see what people have been saying. Mundy says, what if they do a Bullet Club move? Balor beats Cole for NXT title. Cole leaves. Balor becomes the new leader and it becomes the Undisputed Balor Club.
Oh, and that's how you get Cole out.
And that's how you get Cole out of the UE, and that's how you get Balor in. I could see some sort of war for control happening.
Yeah, I think that may... I do think that doing the kind of leader switch thing in wrestling factions that they didn't, that they sort of pioneered really in the Bullet Club, and that became such a thing in Bullet Club. It's something that WWE haven't really ever done.
No.
You know, groups have disbanded, the leaders have, you know, like, I mean, the one that comes to mind immediately for me is when Triple H turned around the Autumn whilst he was still in Evolution and kicked him out, you know, but they've never, there's not really been
a
proper mutinies.
Yeah, like a mutiny, yeah.
And I think if the objective is that Adam Cole is going to go up as a singles competitor, then that's kind of the only way to do it. And I think that's the way that makes perfect sense.
I mean, if they're already...
But my point is I just wouldn't... I would add to the era and take them up. I wouldn't separate them,
yeah,
personally.
I think I would put Balor in there first. I would put Balor in there first as like make it five-man faction and run that for a bit and then do...
I think if the objective of everyone there is to somehow do their act, mm-hmm, on the main roster, I don't think they can do their act on the main roster without having the legitimacy of a big guy.
I feel that they're much more likely to put Balor in with AJ and Gallows and Anderson.
Yeah, but Jabala, I think they should do that.
Yeah.
Because they've got...
It plays on the whole Japan stuff that he's been saying since he went back, like the whole I'm returning to my past.
Yeah, I think the only way... And also, let's not forget, this is all kind of also in the... We probably only got about another, what, two or three years left of AJ,
mm,
before he goes down to a very, very... If not full retirement, a part-time,
yeah,
deal, probably. He's already said that, hasn't he? Two or three? I think the best way to retire in
WWE.
Yeah, so. I think the best way to do it is for him to be booted out of whatever version of the club exists at that moment by Balor.
Give him a big babyface run again.
Yeah, that's how you give Balor a significant spot. You know, that's why you learn the lessons and give him some muscle as well. I just think that's all there. Ready to just pull the trigger on whenever you ever need to.
It's so simple, the story, because it's been told elsewhere before. You just need to nick
just
it.
Just do it again.
All you need to do is plagiarize, man. Like, plagiarize.
Yeah.
Anton H says, every week I look forward to how Garza's pants come off.
Yeah.
I think as does everyone.
Yeah.
The most beautiful man in the world, as Nigel McGuinness keeps calling him. Rex Joseph Kalmarin, also on the subject of Garza's pants, says, Garza's pants are cooler than Seth.
They are.
Mm. Seth has not been doing well at keeping his cool. Hellard247 says, don't want NXT UK, but felt like... Oh, don't watch NXT UK, but...
Don't want it, mate.
Sorry, don't want it. Yeah, sorry, it's don't watch. Don't watch NXT UK, but felt like she was a huge presence. And that's in reference to Kaylee Ray, I'm assuming.
Yeah, well, we were talking about this before we came on air, because I haven't watched a lot of NXT UK, so I don't really know much about her. But yeah, she immediately comes across big and impressive straight away. She's suddenly... And immediately important.
Yeah. I think she's awesome, Kaylee Ray. She had a really good match with Toni Storm to win the belt. I think she's been good as the champion.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like excited to see what she'll do in the War Games match and what kind of role they'll give her, because she's in there with, like, you know, on I think in NXT's eyes, on her team are the three top women on the women's roster in probably like the history since the Four Horsewomen left, I think. Bianca Belair and Io Shirai, I think, are like the two, like, in my head of like of recent NXT crop. These are the really big deals.
Mm.
Obviously, Asuka's gone now, but like Asuka's the only other person floating around there. Justin Thomas says, I will say this every day until I die. People need to stop sleeping on NXT. Whether it's Full Sail or Barclays, they kill it. So that's...
Yeah?
Yeah. I absolutely agree. I think NXT, people need to start watching it and paying attention, because I think... You know, Wednesday nights in wrestling is the best night of wrestling. Like,
yeah,
you know,
it is. Yeah,
every week I read the review. Like on the way in, I read the review of AEW, but haven't watched NXT, and then I'll watch NXT, and I'm always reading the AEW one, being like, I hope NXT matches up. And every week I'm like, yeah, NXT smashed it.
Mm.
And AEW maybe has been better the last couple of weeks, but their pay per view was closer. I think NXT next.
It's interesting, isn't it? I wonder whether. We do still consider them actually to be the rival Wednesday night shows. Does AEW still really view itself? And I think I view it more. I think I've started to view it more in a kind of, it's a main show rival more than an NXT rival now. Mm-hmm. Even though I don't think that's necessarily the case on like ratings and stuff.
Mm.
That's just the, I don't know, that's very much like a visual thing, an aesthetic thing. It's interesting how different, I bet you different parts of the audience view it in different ways.
I think they're very different shows.
Yeah, I think they are.
I think NXT's better for being in the smaller arenas. I think it feels more like, it feels more focused.
Yeah, knows what it is.
Ralph Marion says, could Velveteen Dream be the fourth member of Ciampa's team? Pete has clarified here, saying, I believe both he and Gargano are injured, but you may be wrong.
Well, to be honest, the thing with Velveteen, things, if you're going to do the, let's just do a shock inclusion into a team like that, you know, Velveteen Dream would be someone who isn't very shocking. Mm-hmm. Because he's just a popular person who works for NXT. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not, it's the wrong kind of shocking, you know. So I think they're going to pull someone from the main roster, personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just trying to think, who is it? You know, I mean, could it be Daniel Bryan?
Because
Cole beat?
Maybe. I don't know, like. I think a big shocking inclusion would be really fun and a good way to build, like, to add a secret bit of Survivor Series build in there as well, because it could be someone that someone on the other team is going up against the next night.
Exactly. I think
it could be AJ. It could be Shinsuke. It could be is Cole having a match? Yeah, Brock and, is Cole again actually genuinely against Brock and the Fiend? Has that been announced?
I don't know.
I'm not paying attention massively to the Survivor Series build. I'm a bit focused on War Games. And then finally, Baron Von Huxhold says, DX excommunicated Shawn Michaels when he left with his back injury and when Triple H took over. If I'm wrong, let me know.
I think, yeah, no, they did. But I don't think they ever, I can't remember if they ever did a, I'm trying to think of the how they did the angle. He might be right. In my head, I don't think they did a proper, like, beat down, kick out.
Adam Cole angle. Was killed.
Yeah, Adam Cole was killed. Yeah, well, Adam Cole's still dead.
He's a dead man now.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah, I can't remember what. Yeah, I've look it up. But yeah, I can't actually remember what the DX angle was when Shawn Michaels left originally. Yeah, I can't remember now.
Well, we'll clarify some other time. Yeah. And come back to you. We won't. But
I was, because my instinct was that they didn't do that, and that they
just left. I
like to
make
left.
Promises I don't fulfill.
Yeah, my instinct was in my head that they didn't do a big kicking out thing, but actually now they've said it. It's one of those, like, oh, actually, if I just had a false memory of that.
Mm.
Yeah, we'll look that up.
So we had a big return in our D&D session last night.
Oh, to my D&D?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We did. Oh, yeah.
See? Good what? Memories.
Well, I don't remember anything that happens in our D&D sessions.
No.
This is a regular issue we have.
Well, you didn't remember last night that somebody...
Well, I didn't remember we were playing last night before we left. So there was that. So we didn't start off that
well.
There
was a point at which Luke knocked somebody down in the combat, like water whipped them to trip them up, and you had full advantage to just
I'd already
run
attacked
over
them.
And poke them.
I'd already attacked them when before he did that. Yeah. I knew they were there.
Yeah, I know. And then you, on the next turn, you just ran away.
Well, because then the DM said, oh, these other guys have turned up. One of them's right behind you and about to shoot you.
Yeah.
So I just totally blanked that there was another guy right there.
Yeah, but so we eventually resolved.
You know what? It's because I disengaged.
Yeah,
had I not disengaged, I'd have still been in combat.
And you might have got hit and you would have remembered. So I, so basically what happened was we fought a bunch of this sort of priest who summoned a bunch of seemingly weird angels made of light. They attacked us in this castle to rescue this girl and rescue our friends. We rescued our friends. We're all reunited. It was great. Went back to this inn, and one of us had ended up in this magical library, and it was found the letter that said that these pools of darkness appeared across the lands at places like that have strong ties to the other planes, or places of magical importance, or sites of great sorrow. And now that you've found all of my research into this, you'll meet a friend who will help you decipher it. So we go back into this pub. There's an old man there having a drink. There's the bartender. We're chatting this through, having immediately within 10 seconds forgotten that we'd ever meet a stranger and have them help us do stuff. And then lo and behold, the man at the bar is Mortimer, the healing necromancer, who was a character from my one shot.
That took 2 months.
Which was a 2 month one shot. That betrayed the entire party. by trying to, when they were forging this Heartstone thing so they could leave the Feywilds and get away from Baba Yaga, they handed him the stone in the final battle, and he used it to just blink out of existence and leave them all there.
And but the funny thing was at this point, which is, this is one of the weird things that happens in D&D, which is that my current character, because I'm a new character, didn't know who it was.
Yeah.
One of our other friends who started playing, he's a new character, didn't know who he was.
My character didn't, because he wasn't there.
He wasn't there.
I was the DM.
So of the two people there who did know who it was, one of them didn't really mind him anyway. So then it was just left to Luke.
Luke's character was just trying to go apoplectic.
He couldn't believe none of us could. And then we were just like, going, well, we don't care.
Luke's monk character was like put to the test last night, because he was all of his limits were tested. He ended up pushing a guy up against the wall and being like, "You left us!" Yeah. And he's like, "Oh God, very, very angry."
Yeah, it was great.
I'm excited because now we've now sort of made our peace with this now centuries old necromancer, who's a bit of a dick and a bit treacherous, and he's taken us back to Luke's character's Anders Monastery. So we're going to see some backstory for Ander Windriver, the former playboy turned monk boy.
Yeah.
Luke's
whole character is just sort of, there's a really fun drunk waiting to come out.
Yeah, I can't wait to prize that out of him.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Anyway, well, more on D&D after we've played next time. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.